Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part two of episode number 125 of Mid-60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. So first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part two of episode number 125 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? I'm just going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 25-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge 60 music fan slash expert slash nerd, and each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s, put the show in two parts. First part of the show is talking about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good or why I think it sucks, and do my own personality on the arrangement of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And the second part of the show, dig deep into the history behind that track. And that part of the show talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, who are the studio musicians on the track, whether it be the band members, the studio musicians themselves, or also talk about the song, the history behind the song, who wrote the song, the producer that produced it, the artist that recorded it, and what studio the song was recorded at, where that studio is located, the name of that studio, and also the history behind the record label the song was released on, what was the name of that record label the song was released on, and the peak position the song went up originally in the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out, and the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on this week's episode of the podcast, I just want to say a few things. You know, I'm sure you guys have noticed this by now, but it's this one's coming really, really late, and it looks like I didn't put out an episode last week, but there is a couple reasons for that, and it's not because I decided to take a week off. It's not because of that. It's for a couple other reasons, and one of them is not because I was feeling down or depressed or upset, because I actually was feeling really good last week. I feel really great right now. And it's because of something brand new that just popped into my life, and I'm excited for it, but I won't, for the sake of my own privacy and for the sake of, you know, just, you know, the fact that this is something very personal for me, I won't go into exactly what that is, but I'm very excited for it, but I won't talk about that with you guys, because I think, you know, there needs to be some sort of sense of, yeah, there's certain things I probably will not share with you guys, you know, just for my own personal privacy, you know. But another reason as to why I didn't put out an episode last week was because, like you guys already, if you listen to last week's episode, right, you'll notice that I did a twofer for one episode of my podcast, meaning I did a breakdown analysis and arrangement on two songs. You know, I didn't just do one song, I did two. I did a song, you know, by She and Him, you know, Zoe Deschanel's group. And, you know, and that was, hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And then I did a song that influenced Zoe Deschanel and She and Him, you know, a Phil Spector girl group pop production called You Sure the Boy I Love, which was credited to the Crystals, but really it was actually Darlene Love and the Blossoms who were singing the song. The reason why, you know, I didn't put out an episode last week, another reason is because I was trying to figure out exactly how do I follow this up? What do I do for the next episode? Now, normally I would have done also two, you know, the same thing, just doubled. I would talk about the history behind She and Him in one part of the episode, and then the next part I would talk about Phil Spector and the history behind him, and this would all be in the same episode. Now, I thought about that for quite a while, and I decided that that's probably not going to work. One, because, you know, I'm telling you right now, there's not enough in-depth history about the music behind She and Him for me to, you know, really go super in-depth about them. I mean, I'll talk about how they became a group in the first place, and also this some of the behind-the-scenes information off of that album, and talk about, you know, just some of the things that they've done musically in the past. But the amount of history behind She and Him doesn't even remotely compare to the amount of history that Phil Spector had. I mean, Phil Spector had at least three decades worth of musical history that are worth, you know, looking into and talking about. And I figured that it doesn't make sense for me to do a little bit about Sheen him and then do a whole lot about Phil Spector, because then if I do that, I mean, I'm going to put out a really long episode of my podcast. And I've noticed that, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, that might be one of the reasons why some of the people that tuned into my podcast before stopped listening, because the episodes are just too long. In fact, that's one of the reasons why one of my friends who's been a diehard listener of my podcast for a long time, that might be one of the reasons why he stopped listening, because he just, you know, the episode just got too long for him. So with that being said, since I did something a little different, you know, a couple weeks ago when I did Sheen him and the Crystal's Phil Spector production in the same episode, I'm going to do something different this week, because this is not going to be a two-part episode. I'm not just going to do part one and part two and move on to something else next week. You know, just for the sake of time, for the sake of, you know, that way, you know, I can cover the most ground about Phil Spector in one episode versus just trying to, you know, brush on a few things and just be very brief on his history. I'm going to do a three-part episode of this podcast. It's not going to be a two-part. It's going to be a three-part episode. So part two, which is this week's episode, is actually going to be solely on the history of She and Him. I'm not going to talk about the history behind Phil Spector or the Wall of Sound or anything like that this week, because this week is going to be all about the history behind She and Him. So this is not going to be a long episode, because like I said before, She and Him, there's not a lot, whole lot to talk about here. I mean, they're still kind of a new, fresh band. So there's a lot of stuff that they haven't done yet that they might do at some point in the near future. I don't really know when, but again, there's not going to be a whole lot to say here about She and Him. So this episode might clock in at under 30 minutes. We'll see. I still don't know, but it's definitely not going to be a 2-hour episode, you know, because I'm not going to, you know, go super in depth about, you know, She and Him, because like I said before, there's not much to talk about, you know, but. I mean, I will talk about sort of how Zoe might have heard a lot of the 60s music stuff. But like I said before, this week's going to be all about the She and Him history. And then next week, that's going to be a long one, because that's going to be all about the history behind Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound. And that's going to be a doozy. So because we're going to cover a lot of ground with that episode, because we're going to talk about his early days when he was, you know, just a member of a sort of a 50s pop doo-wop group called the Teddy Bears, all the way to when he was, you know, remixing Let It Be, you know, for the Beatles, and also producing the Ramones. So there's going to be a lot to talk about, you know, for him is concerned. So, you know, next week's going to be all about Phil Spector, and then this week's all going to be all about She and Him. So I'm very excited to, you know, again, to do this, because this is going to be the first time I'm doing three parts. Normally, it's just two parts, and that's it. I move on to something completely different next week. But this week, I'm going to do three parts. So for now, let's get into the history behind She and Him. Okay, so here's another thing I wanted to talk with you guys before I get into the history behind She and Him. like I said before, you know, sometimes, you know, when it comes to certain things, just to get certain facts straight, I do sometimes look stuff up, even though I've said before I usually don't, but I figured that, you know, sometimes it's better to look things up and get a fact right versus guessing and getting it wrong. But, and well, okay, I said that it's better to guess to be wrong than look it up to be right. But, you know, for certain things, you know, that I talk about in my podcast, I mean, I have books about this stuff, so sometimes I'll, you know, look at the book and look at a specific piece of information that's in there and talk about that with you guys. That's what I did when I did the book, when I did the episode about New York and the Brill Building. I actually flipped through pages of this really cool book I have called Studio Stories, How the Great New York Records Are Made. And a lot of what I talked about in that part two of the Shirelles was from that book, you know, so I was looking at that book and telling you guys facts and information about, you know, things from that book. But most of it, I want to say 90% of what I do on my podcast is off the top of my head, you know. But so, yeah, I mean, sometimes I do look things up when I can't remember a piece of information, or, you know, I just to make sure I get something right. But, you know, I mean, but again, I don't always look stuff up, because sometimes I get stuff wrong. So again, this is a podcast created by a human being, so, you know, there's sometimes there's mistakes made, but with this particular episode on She and Him, you know, I'm gonna let you know right now, a lot of what I'm gonna tell you are things I'm gonna try to look up and, you know, things that I will present to you guys. But you know, again, like, here's the other thing about this group. So a lot of what I'm gonna tell you is things I'm gonna look up and, you know, reiterate to you guys from the internet. But I don't really know Zoe that well. I never talked to her on my podcast. I never interviewed Matthew Ward. So a lot of this stuff, a lot of the things I'm going to tell you may not, you know, I'm just going off of my own sort of gut instinct, sort of my own sort of instinction about how things could have happened with her. You know, because I don't know. I've never talked to any of them. I mean, it'd be ideal if I can get to interview both of them so that way, you know, we can get a full picture of their whole sound and everything. But again, like, since they're a new group, right? You know, it's funny because when it comes to stuff from the 60s, I'm so good at memorizing people's names and the recording studios and the addresses. Once I kind of have that stuff down, it's like I can just pull it up off the top of my head. But when it comes to new music, like stuff that came out recently, I, for whatever reason, I just don't have the same sense of recall as to remembering who was on what and where was it recorded and the names of the musicians. So a lot of times when it comes to new stuff and even stuff outside the 60s too, I mean, I don't really have the same sort of recall about musicians of the 70s and even the 80s. I don't have the same kind of, you know, memorization, being able to memorize their names as well. So, you know, for this, for the purpose of She and Him, when I talk about their history, I'm going to, when I pull up, you know, when I try to figure out who played on the album Volume 3 and where it was recorded, I'm going to look that stuff up because I don't remember off the top of my head right now. I wouldn't be able to tell you right now off the top of my head. So, you know, just a full disclosure for you guys, because again, like, this is new. This is not stuff from the 60s. This is new stuff. So I might not have all this information down in my memory banks. So I'm just going to let you guys know that. But anyways, so the thing is about She and Him, right? So I'm sure a lot of you are probably surprised, or maybe not surprised. I mean, like, look, Zoe is one of those, you know, celebrities that, you know, she's an actress, right? I mean, she's been in Elf. She's been in 500 Days of Summer. She's been in a lot of big movies, but she's one of those actresses that's also a really, really good singer. And basically with, you know, the thing is about Zoe is that she has sung in a lot of her movies. But it's interesting to figure out exactly what was the first one she ever sung in, and also what made her become an artist and a songwriter as well as being an actress. Because she was juggling those two things for a very, very long time. And this all kind of got started when she met her duet partner, Matthew Ward, on when she was on set for a film called The Go-Getter. And basically, Zoe was the star of that movie. And anyways, so what made them all of a sudden become a duo and start making music together is that, the director of the film, whose name is Martin Hines, he said, hey, hey, Zoe, this is Matt and Zoe, Matt, why don't you guys, you know, sing a song in the film for their film's end credits? And that's exactly what they did. They basically performed When I Get to the Border by Richard Linda Thompson. And then basically they hit it off right then and there. And, you know, essentially what I think what happened was that, Matthew Ward and, Zoe, you know, I think there might have been an age difference between the two. I mean, they might have been the same age. They might have been a little, not the same age. Yeah, I mean, Matthew Ward was definitely quite a few years older than Zoe. But the thing is that they weren't like, you know, they weren't the same age as Jackie DeShannon or a lot of those other, you know, big 60s groups. So, and they weren't even like, you know, 80s people either, because by the 80s, they were just, you know, kids and teenagers. They weren't even around. They weren't even making music in the 80s either. So they were young enough to have not been there in the 60s, but they were also probably old enough to have heard a lot of that music when it was getting played on oldies radio. Because what was being heard on oldies radio in the 80s and 90s, it was all music from the late 50s and some stuff from the early 50s, but also music from the 60s. Because, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, the 50s and 60s were 20, 30 years ago. So, you know, the rules are with commercial stations is that if music is at least 20, 30 years old, it's technically considered oldies. I know this is, it's weird me saying this, but it's true. I mean, like, you know, you turn on an oldies station now, you're going to hear stuff from the 90s and 80s, you know, because music that's at least around 30, 40 years old is considered oldies. And in the 80s and 90s, I mean, that's how old a lot of the stuff from the 50s and 60s was. So they got to hear a lot of that music, you know, on oldies stations. And as far as how did Zoe get turned on to all this great music from the 60s, I have a sneaking suspicion. Now, again, I don't know if this is true because I've never interviewed her. But, you know, like me, she is also from Los Angeles. So I'm thinking that, you know, Zoe first heard a lot of the great music from the 60s and, you know, early 70s and even stuff from the 50s. She probably heard most of it on the same oldie station I grew up listening to, which was Kareth 101. But she might even heard a lot more stuff considering that, you know, she was older than me and she was a kid in the 80s and 90s. So that's just, you know, how they kind of got started. And then they got signed to an indie label and there was a, hold on a second. Sorry about that. I was summoned to go do something for a second. But anyways, as I was saying, when I mentioned that she and him were getting signed to an indie label, one thing I kind of want to make clear about them from the very beginning is that one reason as to why I think, you know, Zoe was able to, you know, write music that has that old school 60s vibe and not write music like Katy Perry or Lana Del Rey or someone really, really big and modern is that I don't think her main focus was to be a musician from day one. Even though she loved music, she's a songwriter. She plays, she's a multi-instrumentalist. She plays piano, she plays guitar, she sings, you know, and she I think she also plays ukulele and trumpet, if I'm not mistaken. But I think the main reason why she's able to do like really sort of vintage sounding music is because she was never a major label artist. You know, she was always, her and her partner, Matthew Ward, were always independent musicians. Not really independent musicians, but, you know, they didn't have their own labels. But they were signed to indie labels, and they were technically considered indie. Because their stuff really wasn't that mainstream, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, they appeared on big TV shows, like all the big-time talk shows and everything, and their stuff made different Billboard charts, but not the Hot 100, if that makes any sense. So, because by the time she and him became successful, I mean, in the 60s, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of options as far as charts you can make for Billboard. I mean, they had the R&B charts, the country charts, and they had the Hot 100. And then they had some other, you know, the album 200, like the top 200 albums of, you know, of that time, you know. But, you know, your options as far as making it in the pop realm were essentially the Hot 100. But by the time she and him became successful, you know, it wasn't just the Hot 100 and that's it. You know, by the time she and him became successful, there was a bunch of other charts that were being made at that time, you know, that were essentially, there's a bunch of different charts that you can make for on Billboard. And, you know, and a lot of times if you made one of these charts, it didn't mean you're a mainstream big-time artist. It just meant that you were an indie artist signed to an independent label and not really trying to go for that Justin Timberlake, you know, that kind of thing, like Flo Rida or something a lot more modern, you know. So, and that's essentially that's what they were. I mean, so I think, you know, her music wasn't the only thing she was doing for a while, so that allowed her to do more vintage sounding stuff, you know, and it was one of those things where it's like, if she was only doing music and that was the only thing she was doing, she'd probably do more modern sounding stuff. But she also had a hugely successful career as an actress. I mean, you know, New Girl and all the stuff that she did. Again, very, you know, a lot of money coming in from being an actress. So that helped kind of offset, you know, the stuff she was doing as a musician, you know. So, but yeah, so essentially, you know, what happened was that they put out three albums, and each album was called Volume 1. Second album was called Volume 2, and respectfully, the next album was called Volume 3. But the thing to keep in mind about, you know, she and him is that on every one of these albums, you can hint that there was a sense of influence happening with, the 60s were creeping into a lot of their songs. Now, another reason, here's another very specific piece of information that isn't necessarily quite well known to the general public as to how Zooey Deschanel could have heard a lot of these 60s tunes. But a friend of mine, you know, as you guys, I've talked about him on my podcast before, Andy Paley, he told me that she and him were really, really good friends with this other band that he has produced before called NRBQ. And NRBQ was a band from the East Coast. I'm pretty sure they were from New Jersey. But anyways, you know, they were from New Jersey, and they were huge on the East Coast and had a lot of success over there. And the guys in the band were older. I mean, they were, you know, baby boomers, so they were really into a lot of the 60s stuff, you know. So one of the guys in the band had this humongous, just insane record collection full of lots of obscure 45s, lots of stuff that no one has really heard before, and stuff that you would not believe you would be able to find. And it's really, really rare songs. You know, a lot of it's from this girl group stuff from the 60s. You know, he said that Annie told me that, you know, with she and him, since they were such good friends with each other, both, you know, NRBQ and she and him, you know, a lot of MRBQ definitely influenced she and him as far as their taste in music is concerned. And Zooey Deschanel probably heard a lot of the songs that she, you know, she loved, a lot of the obscure 60s stuff. A lot of it came from one of the guys in NRBQ, had this huge, insane record collection full of really, really deep, obscure 45s from the 60s. And she probably heard most of that music from, you know, him. In fact, the two covers they did off of Volume 3, which is actually an obscure cover of a really obscure song that Jeff Barry and Ellie Greenwich, you know, wrote. And it was this Ellie Greenwich solo single, and she never had any hits as a solo artist. And it was released off of Redbird, and I'm pretty sure that came from his record collection, you know. And that song was called Baby. And again, so, I mean, but the point is that it's not like they didn't hear, that was like the first time they heard that music was from NRBQ. I really do think that, you know, Zooey, you know, was just like me. She heard this music ever since she was just a little girl. And, like, I really think that she heard all this music that, you know, that I love, you know, because she grew up listening to the same oldie station, and her parents had it on the car, just like how my parents had it on the car. So I really think that, you know, we're very much alike in the sense that we grew up listening to the exact same music and grew up listening to the same songs. And if you don't believe me, I mean, you know, if you there's interviews online of, you know, her talking about how much she loves the Beach Boys and the Zombies and, you know, and a couple and the Beatles and a lot of other bands from that time, you know, and she into all the British Invasion stuff. I mean, there's interviews where she talks about this stuff. And yeah, I mean, you might have to dig for it, because like I said before, they've been kind of irrelevant for a while because they haven't released anything in a long time. And I'll talk about as the possible reason as to maybe why they haven't in a while. But I mean, yeah, so, you know, the thing is that she and him were essentially, you know, their music was definitely influenced by all this 60s stuff. And it wasn't just because of NRBQ. I mean, it's not like they knew this stuff. They never knew this stuff before they met the guys in NRBQ. I mean, Zoe knew a lot of this music, you know, just from listening to it when she was a kid. And she's known this stuff for her entire life. So she's a lot like me in that regards. So, you know, they put out, you know, in volume one and volume two contain, you know, covers of stuff that, you know, is very much, you know, hinting to that decade. Like on volume one, there's a cover of You Really Got a Hold on Me. And there's a cover of a Lennon McCartney song called I Should Have Known Better. So, you know, and they recorded a lot of these songs in a bunch of different places. Because, look, I mean, the thing is that in the 60s, you had Detroit, you had Nashville, you had L.A., you had Chicago, you had New York. And then you had, you know, I mean, there were the big cities that, you know, that had, you know, hit songs recorded. But once the 60s, you know, disappeared and then you were kind of getting to now, you know, nowadays we have stuff recorded all over the place. It's not just, you know, L.A., Detroit, Chicago, Nashville, New York, and it's not just those cities. It's not the big cities anymore. A lot of stuff is recorded all over the place. And this kind of started in the 70s. You know, a lot of stuff was being done, you know, a bunch of other places. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, stuff just didn't need to be recorded live anymore. You can do 16, 24 track stuff. So a lot of stuff was being done in other places and sometimes being recorded in multiple places. You know, that started in the 60s, but it blew up in the 70s. But really, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like after the 60s ended, stuff was being recorded all over the place. And just to give you an example, you know, it's basically the volume one was mixed in a studio owned by Mike Mogus in Omaha, Nebraska, you know, which is pretty insane. I mean, that's a random place for a song to be recorded. And then basically volume two, you know, again, like a lot of it is still LA, but then also some of it is Portland and some other places. You know, so I mean, you know, where stuff is being recorded now is so all over the place. It's not just the big cities, but you know, and I'll talk about that in just a few minutes because we're going to talk about the session details behind Volume 3, and we'll talk about what kind of a role did Zoe play, you know, as a musician, in this project. You know, because some people might wonder, okay, so you've got Zoe Deschanel and you got Matthew Ward. Who did most of the heavy lifting? What exactly did they do as musical partners, and what were their roles? I mean, you know, is this more like a duet thing, or is this more like one person does one thing, the other person does the other thing? We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Okay, so the credits for Volume 3. Zoe Deschanel is credited as a songwriter and a singer, as a lead singer. And she plays tambourine, and she plays piano, and then she plays a vibraphone, and then she also plays, just give me 1 second. Like I said before, like, I don't always have this stuff memorized, so... Yeah, she plays piano, vibraphone, and tap, and ukulele. So, you know, and she also does some percussion, too. You know, so she, and also, the other thing is that, my theory on the she and him dynamic and how this duo worked was that Zoe Deschanel was more or less the songwriter and the principal singer. So she, you know, a lot of this stuff, a lot of the 60s influence, most of it comes from her. I mean, I've read interviews with Matthew Ward, and he has specifically stated that, you know, the 60s sound, a lot of it is from, you know, her, because he said in one interview that he didn't even know a lot about this music until he met Zoe. You know, so Zoe turned him on to a lot of stuff from the 60s that he never heard before. So I think the role that Matt played as far as, you know, this duet is concerned is that Matt was the principal arranger and producer. So he, you know, listened to Zoe's songs and figured out, okay, so how can we make these records sound close enough to these 60s songs without really copying from them? And also, another thing that he did is that he came up with all these really cool arrangements that had elements of a lot of these 60s records. But again, you know, they weren't trying to rip anybody off. But they were copying a lot of the same sort of arrangement characteristics that a lot of these 60s songs had, you know, and basically, you know, but he wasn't really taking any lyric or melodies from any of these songs. You know, he was just using a lot of the same arrangements that, you know, that a lot of these 60s, you know, musicians were using at that time. And here's the other thing is that, you know, if someone were to do this right now, I'm not really sure exactly, you know, how well this would go because, a friend, Andy actually told me this, and this is kind of interesting, but unfortunately, there was a ruling with the Blurred Lines, Marvin Gaye, and I forget the name of the guy who, you know, it was his estate, and it was versus the other guy, Robin Thicke. It was Robin Thicke. So there was a lawsuit that happened between Marvin Gaye and Robin Thicke. You know, who Robin Thicke recorded Blurred Lines and basically recorded, you know, a completely different song with the same, you know, kind of drum beat as Got to Get Up by Marvin Gaye. And what happened was this. So, you know, Robin Thicke lost the case, but after that, it was ruled in copyright law that a song is no longer just a lyric and a melody, but you can actually copyright a beat or a part of an arrangement. And, you know, and this album, She and Him Volume 3, I'm pretty sure it came out before this lawsuit took place, because I think this lawsuit took place, if I remember correctly, in 2014. So this was before you know, the lawsuit between Robin Thicke and Marvin Gaye. It was basically before that. So, you know, this might have been one of the last albums that could be made with certain arranged 60s arrangement elements just by like a simple kick and snare pattern, which is the same as a 60s thing. I mean, this might have been one of the last albums made before that official court ruling was made. You know, so that's actually pretty cool. But anyways, so like I said before, so this is Volume 3, right? So the other musicians on this album besides, you know, Zooey Deschanel and Matthew Warr. Now, Zooey's, again, she's playing piano and she's playing vibraphone and she's playing, doing some percussion stuff. So she's on this record, you know. But also you had the bass player, which is Joey Spampinato, and the drummer, which is Scott McPherson. And then basically, now if you're curious as to who were the string players on this record, now they were credited, and they were essentially, Tony Hagerman and Amanda Lawrence. Tony Hagerman played violin, and Amanda Lawrence played viola. Now, granted, now there's only two string players credited on this album. But it doesn't sound like just two string players. It sounds like there's a bunch. Well, you know, this is recorded in 2013. So, you know, we have Pro Tools. We have all the gear that we need to do lots and lots of overdubbing. I mean, this isn't like, you know, 1962 where you only have four tracks or sometimes even less than that, like two or three tracks. So you can do a lot more overdubbing, you know, now. So what they probably did is that they did only play violin and viola, but they just did lots and lots and lots of overdubbing, you know, and played mostly the same, you know, they made it sound like a whole string section, you know. I mean, that's basically kind of what it sounds like they did, you know. But again, when you listen to these records, it literally sounds like it was done live with the band. Again, I'm not sure if that's how it went down. Again, I like, a lot of this is based off of my own personal sort of feeling. I mean, I think there was a lot of overdubbing happening, but again, I don't know, because I've never talked to Zooey or Matt about this. I mean, in a perfect world, I'd interview him and ask him this question. But again, you know, Zooey is a very big celebrity, so she's kind of hard to get a hold of. But yeah, so those were, you know, the string players on this album. And it was recorded at the Sound Factory in L.A. and mixed at the Magic Shop in New York. And then basically it was also mixed at in ARC Studios in Omaha, Nebraska, and recorded at Jackpot exclamation point in Portland, Oregon, and Sonic Trout in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And it was mastered at Gateway Mastering Studios in Portland. I think Portland, I forget what ME is. I'm gonna have to look that up. It's definitely different city. I forget what that, you know, Ackerman stands for, but yeah, so those are the principal, you know, musicians on this album. But by the way, so Matt is playing guitar in a lot of these records. He is the guitar man on a lot of these songs. And now, also, if you're wondering, who are the female backup vocalists on this song? Because, man, they do a great job emulating all those 60s girl groups. Well, it was a group that, you know, they actually did they did shows with back in the day. And this group was called Tilly and the Wall. And that's the name of the group that actually sang backup on, you know, for Zooey Deschanel on this record. And and again, they're from Omaha, Nebraska, so there was kind of a Nebraska connection between she and him and this, you know, in this group, you know. So, you know, and that their names are Kiana Allard, Neely Jenkins, and Derek Presnell, and Jamie Presnell, and Nick White. So, you know, I mean, I think there was like three of those girls were basically became the backup vocalists on She and Him. Now, also, you know, the other thing about She and Him is that one thing that they did, and this is probably what they're most well known for as far as music is concerned, and that is, you know, they recorded some Christmas albums, and a lot of these Christmas albums did really, really well. You know, and I think, you know, if you ever go to a Starbucks or a Trader Joe's or somewhere around Christmas time, you'll hear one of those tracks off of that album. Now, here's the thing. So, you know, I think that might be the only time you'll hear She and Him's music anywhere, really, is during Christmas time, you know, because they recorded some Christmas albums. And in fact, right before COVID, right, when live music was still happening, they were playing shows, essentially, you know, doing their Christmas songs. They were doing Christmas shows. And it's interesting to think about that, because it feels like the only time people really appreciate music that doesn't sound current or sounds new is during Christmas time. I mean, that's the only time people really go searching for music that doesn't sound old. That's the only time people go searching for music that doesn't sound current or new. They want to hear old music. They, you know, every year around Christmas time, they throw on those Christmas classics, you know. And essentially, you know, a lot, that's kind of what She and Him did, because they put out, I think, two Christmas albums. But really, I mean, that's just they lock themselves into that market of Christmas music. But, you know, it's been a long time since they've done anything else, really. You know, so it's one of those things where it's like, you know, they've made two Christmas albums, but it's kind of sad that no one else really sort of digs into their other stuff other than their Christmas music. And I feel like we as a society have this thing of, you know, you're not going to hear a lot of, you know, retro 60s sounding music inside of, you know, bars. I mean, you'll sometimes hear it, but you won't really hear a lot of retro 60s stuff inside of Starbucks and, you know, convenience stores, because I don't know, it feels like we have this, as a society, we kind of forget about a lot of this music. We have a way of sort of pushing it sweeping it under the rug, not necessarily saying it didn't happen, but I'm just saying that we have a tendency to, you know, just to leave this stuff behind and kind of move forward and kind of just, you know, to other things. And it's, to me, it's kind of sad, because I feel like, you know, again, this music is really, really good. And I feel like people who make this kind of music right now, I feel like they should be, you know, have more notoriety, even if they're not like a huge indie artist. And even if they're not like really, really famous, I feel like it's sad that they're not getting the same kind of a love and attention as a lot of the big name. They're not getting the same kind of love and attention as, let's just say, like Billie Eilish or someone like that. But really, I mean, I really do think that this music, you know, it needs to be more popular and more people need to listen to it, because it's just so good, you know. And I feel like, you know, I really wish that people would give more attention to Zooey's music, because again, like, I might have heard, you know, a couple tracks off of, you know, Volume 3 way back when, in 2013, when it first came out. But again, it's like, you know, I didn't discover her music for the first time until November of last year during Thanksgiving, you know. So it took me a while for me to even, you know, discover her music, you know. So just the fact that I never really heard her stuff till then, And it's one of those things where it's like, I you know, it's the fact of that less and less people are discovering her music, and she's becoming less and less relevant now because she hasn't released any new music in a long time. It's, to me, that's a little sad, and I'm hoping that she gets back on it and starts releasing more new material, because I really do think she needs to. But I mean, I do know that she is a mom now, so I know that she is essentially, you know, she's gonna have her life wrapped around that. So I don't think she has, I'm not sure if she has any intentions to release any new music anytime soon, but I'd love to hear new stuff from her, because I love her stuff so much, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I mean, when this album, I mean, the other cool part about is that she's actually played gigs with Brian Wilson. And that's actually kind of cool if you think about it. She's actually done shows with him. And when this album came out, they did a lot of gigs and tours. But this was all when Joey was trying to juggle her career as an actress and as a musician. And she quit becoming an actress. But around the time she, you know, well, I don't know if she's actually quitting. I take that back. I don't know. But she stopped doing a lot of stuff as an actress. And then around the same time, she stopped putting out a lot of new music, too. Because the last Gene Hymn single that came out was in 2018, and then that was the same year that New Girl went off the air. So, I mean, you know, she hasn't really done a whole lot of anything since then, you know. So I'm hoping she makes a comeback with her music, because I love to hear her stuff. And, you know, I really think that, you know, she should be more well-known as a musician and songwriter. But so many people really only know her as an actress. But, I mean, man, she was such a great songwriter and musician, and hopefully I'll get to interview her one day. So that concludes part two of episode number 125 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you learned a few things about Zooey Deschanel that you didn't really know about her from listening to this episode of this podcast, but you grew up watching her on New Girl and on Elf and some other things too, you know, I would love it if you can email me at samltwilliatiCloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Also, please do keep streaming my 2-song single, Turquoise Apricot and She Said No. I know it's been out for a little bit now, but a lot of you guys probably haven't heard it yet. So please go follow the link to the script in the description of this episode of this podcast to go listen to it. I would love it if you can do that. That'd be really, really cool, you know. So, because you, like I said before, you guys can get a little sense of, you know, where my musical roots are as far as a musician is concerned. Well, you guys are doing that by listening to this episode of this podcast, but you'll get to see a different side of myself as far as a different part of creativity about me, you know, as far as, you know, because I'm also a musician and songwriter, and you get to see that part of myself as well as the music historian part of myself, which is what I present to you guys every week. So please go ahead and listen to that. And like I said, there's more to come too. I think there might be one more single coming out after this before the EP. You know, we're kind of working that out right now as we speak. But there's, like I said before, the Grand Museum opportunity is still currently in the works. I'm going to be shooting the pitch video for that really, really soon. So I can't wait to do that. I'll keep you guys updated on that, because my school found a videographer. So you can also you can check out the official Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast. You'll be able to find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the ones I've interviewed on my podcast, some ones I mentioned in interview episodes of this podcast. So if you like that, definitely, you know, let me know if you found some cool songs in the playlist, you know, and those songs gave you ideas for the kind of music I should talk about next to my podcast that I haven't yet. Please email those ideas to me at samltwilliatiCloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram, iHeartOldies. You can also, another thing you can do is that you can check out the official Redbubble merch store for this podcast. You'll be able to find all the official podcast merch that I currently have right now. And it'll include the super cool logo that I personally came up with a design for. It's named my podcast and Keep On Trucking Tie-Dye Font. The name of my podcast at the bottom. It's super cool. I can't wait for you guys. Please go check that out. I would love it if you can do that. So, yeah. So, like I said before, this is not a conclusion, meaning I'm going to do something completely different next week. Next week is going to be part 3 of this 3-part episode of this podcast. So again, this is part two. Part three next week is going to be all about Phil Spector. So that's going to be really, really cool because you're going to learn so much about Phil, and a lot of what I'm going to say, I actually have an autobiography about Phil. You know, it's not an autobiography. He didn't write it, but it was an official Phil Spector biography book written by a guy named Mark Grabowski called He's a Rebel. So I will be citing many different sections of that book for this podcast. And I can't wait for you guys to hear that because you're going to get really good insight on the really sort of unwell mind of Phil Spector, and also talk about what happened to him in the past that might have caused him to be such a not that great of a person, and what was going on in this family life that just really messed him up as a person, you know, and you know, later on. So I'm going to talk more about that, and also talk about his history too, because he goes back a lot farther than people really even know, to be honest with you, because people think that he really started in the 60s, but he actually started in the late 50s. So it's going to be really, really cool. And I'm going to talk about some of the people that were associated with him and what they thought of him in general, and why he had a tendency to kind of burn bridges as a musician and as a person in general with a lot of the people that he worked with. You know, so that's something I'll get more into when I talk about him next week. So I'm really, really excited to do that. And so, yeah, so this is again part two, but again, this is going to be a 3-part episode. So there's more to come still on, you know, Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound. And then we'll talk more about next week. And, you know, again, if like I said before, I didn't provide a whole lot of information about Sheen him because there's a lot of things I just don't know, because, you know, it's just, you know, Zoe hasn't been interviewed a whole lot about this. And again, like, no one's ever done an in-depth interview about only her music. A lot of people only really, when people hit her up, they only really want to ask her about a lot of the acting stuff that she's done and what she will do soon. I mean, she's a celebrity, so a lot of what is current people are really interested in are sort of her relationships and her family life and all that. But a lot of people don't really talk a whole lot about her music, and that's why I love to interview on my podcast, because you know, I could literally ask her any questions I'd like to, but it would be all about her music, and people would get a really good idea for who she is as a musician and songwriter as well as an actress, because most people only know her for the acting work she's done, and that's what most people even ask her when people talk to her about stuff like that. So I'm sure she'll probably come back with her music at some point, but anyway, so I'm Sam Williams, and thank you for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please! Keep things groovy.